We'll see.
Okay.
What is your name?
Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Mabuza, as I indicated yesterday. There's something that I want all of us to understand. Yesterday we made and we overlooked one thing that I want to announce now, that at the beginning of the workshop yesterday, we have indicated to the workshop that whatever is presented here cannot be challenged outside this workshop. And therefore there's a rule that covers every person who made a presentation in this room that he or she cannot be challenged outside. And I would like to ask my co-chair here to read the rule so that all of us at the end of this workshop should not go outside and challenge anybody on the presentation made in this workshop. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Casey. My name is still Candida Senduza. I'll just read it. It says, in terms of rules of the National Assembly, Rule 138A reads as follows. Please be informed that by law, you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any documents that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that answers or the documents could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to evidence or documents required in this proceeding. Thank you. It's absolutely clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Senduza. And now we can proceed with our presentation. Without any waste of time, I would like to invite Hoshi Makhiru and that is representing National House of Traditional Leaders to make his presentation. Mark.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Land Rural Development and Land Reform, other chairpersons of various portfolio committees present, honorable members of portfolio committees of this house and provincial houses, corporate centers, ladies and gentlemen. When issues around rural development and land reform or any other issue around the livelihood of rural people are raised, among the stakeholders that will respond is National House or Traditional Leaders or Traditional Leaders themselves. I can surely upfront the House is taking a best view with the utmost objectivity in this presentation. We have no reason to score points, but to state the case that is, I'm representing the National House on behalf of its chairperson, Osimo Awani. The House is pleased to be part of this august occasion and want to express its gratitude to the committee and other committee in the cluster for inviting the House to take part in this very important workshop, which is about the livelihood and the future of rural masses. To us, this shows that Parliament attaches very importance to structures established in terms of the constitution, which includes the National House. The House is among the structures well best to raise issues on living conditions in the rural areas and the effect of government efforts and programs on the lives of these people. I can with surety say the House has a responsibility to speak on behalf of all traditional leaders and their people. This does not construe that any traditional leader is barred from raising issues pertaining to his or her traditional authority. The National House believes that the perspective of traditional leaders hereby expressed through the National House will help identify gaps and recommend solutions, as well as to report progress being made where necessary. In presence of rural development, we regard this concept of rural development as an integrated focus of government which is geared towards uplifting the conditions in rural areas. This stems from the fact that these areas were neglected by party governments. It cannot be therefore confined to one department of rural development and land reform. This problem, rural development, means in our view the total transformation of rural areas in all areas of life, be it municipal services, education, health services, social and many other services that are central to human existence, especially in rural areas. In our view, rural development calls for all spheres of government, national, provincial, and local, to work closely together and prioritize. The role of traditional leaders in this vocation is very important because it is at a level, because it is an important partner when driving this process for rural development through identification of needs, So all the stages up to implementation. The traditional leaders or council should be fully involved. Any development agenda in rural areas that excludes traditional leaders is bound to fail. This country cannot afford any more failures stemming from neglect or exclusion of one or another stakeholder, especially traditional council. This calls for a closer cooperation between municipalities and traditional council, because it is at this level that everything is happening. A tussle between municipal council, traditional council over maybe allocation and use of land or priority on projects will delay development. People in rural areas who are mainly affected do not care who brings about development. All they want is to change their lives. Therefore, I repeat, we cannot afford as rural people, as traditional leaders, to engage in endless tasks with our municipal counterpart. But any effort intentionally pursued to sideline traditional leaders in developing their areas is not going to succeed. Rural development is also about personal advancement of individual members of the community to understand their rights and obligations in this new era. Madam Chair, in not so long distant future, this country is going to be grafting an electioneering mood. Rural masses will be subjected to this and that form of oppression and intimidation, citing, if you do not elect this or the other party, you will suffer consequences. If the level of personal development could be raised in rural areas, capacity building, for them to know their rights, their obligations, and the state's obligations, they could not be pushed around. This could be achieved through raising the levels of literacy and other campaigns at improving the understanding of how government and state institutions work. This will enable rural people to engage parliament when dealing with bills affecting them. I can say with surety that this House, when reaching out to stakeholders, especially rural areas, the very rural of the areas are not reached. Bills are only entertained at what one could term an academic level. The very people who are going to bear the brunt of policies and legislation passed are not given time to reflect correctly on this legislation. At the moment, the contribution of the rural people on policy and legislation is minimal because of level of personal development. Since 1994, on impressions of development or progress thereof, the country has made remarkable progress in many areas of life of the rural people. Water, electricity, and many other social amenities have been provided, including schools and hospitals. It is also worth noting that there are still those rural areas which have seen little or no change at all. These areas are still without clean water. They are being forced to drink water from unhygienic sources, sharing water with domestic animals, a recipe for bad life. In some places, infrastructure may be provided but will last only for a short time due to shoddy work on the part of the service provider or due to vandalism by community members. We must all of us try very hard to instill the sense of ownership of public properties in our communities. Despite these challenges, the house is of the opinion that the country is on the right track. We need only to consolidate our efforts in the same direction. Our perspective on land reform. Madam Chair, you recall that the president of Controversa, Gosio Olumisa, in his closing remarks said we share a lot in common with the House. So I could not, or the House could not repeat what Controversa has tabled. We complement each other. The program on land reform is very important to traditional leaders and rural communities in general, because their lives revolve around the land. Many speeches have been delivered on the emotive nature of land allocation, ownership in use. I need not repeat such. The House commends government for reopening claims on land as it gives rural communities an epic chance to reclaim their lost land. The withdrawal of Clara was a serious setback on the part of rural communities, and the National House is looking forward to the development of communal land tenure reform policy and resultant legislation thereof. But we want to emphasize the fact that legislation which will move entirely from communal ownership and administration of land will have little or no support at all from rural people. We have not heard, as a House, cries of calls from rural people for individual title deeds. All we hear are calls from academics, but the people who are directly affected, our people, we have not had such a call. On land restitution, government should strengthen support and monitoring of emerging farmers and landowners. Once more, Madam Chair, this was just a broad presentation which we think speaks to the core of what traditional leaders and traditional communities want. Thank you once more for changing us in this world. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Without any waste of time, I would like to invite Dr. Tembekanu Waipofi. I don't know whether I pronounce it correctly. And then write an invitation community and make his presentation. If I pronounce your surname correctly, my apologies.
No, it sounds like it was correct. I can't remember, but it sounds like it was okay. Thank you. I'm meant to be short so that I don't take up much time from the community presentation. You would have heard that we are warned not to adopt academic positions and to allow the people themselves to speak. So I classify myself as one of the academics, so I will not take a lot of time. There are probably, I mean, having listened to the conversation earlier, there are probably two or three areas that sort of remain issues of conversation around the question of communal land rights since we had the constitution. The first is, what role should be played by traditional authorities in communal areas? Because the constitution provides for the existence of traditional authorities, and it doesn't define in precise terms what role they should play. But the constitution contains an important qualifier, which is the existence or the recognition of traditional authorities must happen in accordance with customary law, and there's some significance to that statement as well. The second is, how does one deal with the issue of tenure? Or give effect to section 25(6) of the constitution. And then the third is the contentious question about resource allocation. And that raises two questions. The one is a substantive question: who is entitled to resources? Then the second is a procedural question: how is that entitlement decided? And who decides that entitlement? And all of this relates to the question I spoke to at the beginning. So perhaps then the starting point is the constitution itself. What does the constitution say should happen in circumstances such as this? As I stated at the beginning, the constitution doesn't give us a full definition of what should happen. But it tells us in section 211 and 212 that the role and the status of traditional authorities is recognized subject to customary law, in accordance with customary law. The second thing it tells us is that Parliament is entitled to pass national legislation, not devolution to the provinces or devolution to municipalities, but national legislation taking into account customary law, subject to customary law. So we then have two important qualifiers. National legislation itself, which can be passed by Parliament, may amend customary law where it is appropriate, but it must first establish what customary law is before a case is made for amendment. And national legislation must itself be subject to the constitution in the same way as customary law ought to subject to the constitution. So we know that the starting point at the very least is establishing what customary law is. Now, when we are told that we want to hear from the people, that should not be confused from hearing from traditional leaders, because there is sometimes a dichotomy between the traditional leader and their own people themselves, and a point of disagreement, and how should those points of disagreement be resolved. So we want to suggest that ultimately Parliament is constitutionally obliged to listen not to the traditional leader, although they are part and parcel of the equation and an important part of that equation, but ultimately listen to the people as to how do they live their lives today. And that in part is the answer to the DG's question, which is, well, how do we, having recognized the distortions around the issue of boundaries, how do we then move forward to resolving it? So I want to make the first suggestion, which is perhaps the answer is listening to the people themselves and putting in enforced mechanisms to establish what the living customary law is. We accept, of course, that there have been distortions. But if you went to the village, certainly if you went to my own village in Kano and you spoke to my people, they'll tell you of the living customary law in relation to how they appoint their chiefs. And they will tell you that they do not agree with legislation that imposes chiefs from the top down, that their own practice is a bottom-up and a democratic-centric approach to the election of chiefs. So perhaps that is the one useful starting point, is that Parliament should play a facilitative role in establishing living customary law. And we move then to the next issue. And that's the question of the what role should be played by traditional councils in respect of resource allocation, whether it is land, or whether it is mining, or whether it is water. All of these constitute subjects of intense conversations in the areas where we work. We don't sit in our offices and dream up with problems. Clients come to us and take statements from them. And that's why it's not an academic input, but it's an input based on our own experiences of what the people tell us when they come to our offices. They fight about land, they fight about mining, they fight about water, they fight about delivery. They go to municipalities in the context of Marikana. They go to a municipality and they say, we have a problem of the construction of the road. But they are told by the municipality that they must go and speak to the traditional leader. But they say, well, we can't speak to the traditional leader because we don't recognize the legitimacy of the traditional leader. Because the reason we don't recognize the legitimacy is because this is a 1951 appointed traditional leader. It's an apartheid era traditional leader. And that then relates both to the question of boundaries, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. But let me stick to the question of how we deal with the resource allocation. CLARA was declared unconstitutional, but its remnants sadly are re-emerging according to the presentation made by the DG yesterday. I wasn't here, but I've been given a copy of the PowerPoint presentation. It tells us that what will happen in the envisaged new regime is that traditional councils will now hold title to communal land. So it will not be communities, but it will be traditional councils. There will also be a reference point for land administration, not communities, but traditional councils. They will also allocate land. They will also adjudicate disputes relating to the allocation of land. Now, it is self-evident that this is simply a recipe for conflict, because you cannot have the traditional councils allocating and then resolving disputes about the very allocation decisions that they have made. And you cannot displace communities from the role that they are inheriting as a matter of heritage in relation to customary law. So it's quite clear that the proposals that are coming from the DGR will probably be unconstitutional if they are ultimately converted to legislation. And it is also quite clear that they will undermine the security of tenure of people living in communal areas. And that therefore it will not meet the objects in 25.6 of the Constitution, and it will also undermine living customary law under Section 211 and Section 212 of the Constitution. So the government must simply scrap the idea, quite frankly, and develop a new set of ideas that moves away from the notion of concentration of power within the traditional council to dispense this power to communities themselves. It's not as if they can't think because they are poor or uneducated. And they care about who decides their allocation. They don't just sit and wait for resources to be delivered to them. They care about democracy itself. Certainly those coming from my own village care about democracy. They don't just care about their own stomach. Now, then, an issue related to the question of the allocation is the question of boundaries. Now, we've been asked by the government, well, how should we deal with this complicated question of the boundaries? We've made one proposal, which is, well, the boundaries perhaps ought to be resolved by the communities themselves. But there is probably another answer, which is the sort of legalese answer. This issue was debated at the Constitutional Court in the Tongwana case. Now, I just want to quote one paragraph, I won't be long, Madam Chair, from that judgment, which simply illustrates how dangerous the approach that we seem to be contending with at the moment is. And this is what Justice Noble said, who wrote for a unanimous court. The Black Authorities Act, and that's the 1951 Act, gave the state president the authority to establish, with due regard to native law and custom, tribal authorities for African tribes as the basic unit of administration in the areas to which the provisions of CLARA apply. The tribal authorities had the power to advise and assist the government and any territorial regional authority in connection with matters relating to the development and improvement of land within their jurisdiction. And then it goes on, and then it says towards the end, it is these tribal authorities that have now been transformed into traditional councils for the purposes of Section 28(4) of the Traditional Leadership and Government Framework Act of 2003. So you then see two problems and two solutions. The first is that CLARA applies in areas that were actually, the old CLARA applies in areas that were classified as tribal residential areas by the Black Authorities Act. The second is that we also know that these tribal authorities are now called traditional councils, which the DG now, or not the DG, but the department, now wants to give further, to enhance their power. These are now the traditional councils under Section 28 of the Traditional Leadership and Government Framework Act of 2003. Now, this is not legislation that comes from the old era. It's our own legislation. It's the legislation passed by the Democratic Parliament, this Section 28. So what, if you ask yourself the question, what entrenches these boundaries, apartheid era boundaries? These apartheid era boundaries are not entrenched by old legislation. They are entrenched by our old legislation, the 2003 legislation. That's quite an easy solution. Parliament must scrap Section 28 of the Traditional Leadership and Framework Government Act. There would be no crisis if it's scrapped. In fact, if anything, it would entrench and give effect to the entitlement of communities to govern themselves. Now, the final point I must make, Madam Chair, relates to this whole issue. Well, I'm not sure if it's become contentious, but it might become a contentious issue, which is who then should make these decisions? If we agree, at least as far as we make the submission, if we agree that these decisions should not be made certainly by traditional councils alone, and these decisions should not be made by the government certainly acting alone, we've asked for a more democratic-centric notion of government. So what's clear to us is that whatever Parliament intended by passing Section 211 and 212 of the Constitution, they did not intend to create a fourth tier of government. Chiefs were never intended to be a fourth tier of government. It was only three tiers of government. So it ought to be clear that the powers relating to the delivery of resources reside ultimately on the democratically elected government, which is the national, the provincial, and the municipality. It is not residing with the chiefs. You showed me I was 4 minutes, but I'm now a property. Where I live it, and if it's necessary, I'll deal with some questions.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Without any waste of time, I'd like to invite on land rights and mining Ndate Moti Khosi Tsile Pilani to come and make his presentation.
My name is Muchi Pilani, and I come from a village called Mokabe in the Moses Kotana municipality at Ward 6 in Northwest. I stand here representing Mokabe community. Muchi is the head of the royal family at Mokabe, and I'm also the chairperson of the entire Clans of Mokabe community. I'll start with my story. In 1932, where we were forcibly removed from the Klerefontein as a result of the Land Act of 1930, we settled in Mahom, Welchabach, and Mahom is Ronostekral and Mokabe is Welchabach. The farm has been purchased with a combined contribution of the Khosi and the other clans. That is Morema, Madibani, Mabudisa, and Morokolohai. Ronostekral was purchased in 1909. And where I'm residing now is at Mokabe. It was purchased in 1926. Respectfully, for grazing purposes. Following the removals in 1932, Klerefontein was subdivided into three areas, which is Doshinkomst, that was called Rona Bibita Patwani in Setswana, that was registered in 1948. And then Ma Rode Rand was registered in 1968, which was called Makuchani by then in Setswana. The third portion is the remaining portion, which is Klerefontein, where we come from originally. One of the open cast mine with large platinum deposit belonging to the major mining company in the Northwest is on this land, in the same area where our ancestral graves that were removed in preparation for mining activities around 2008. We submitted a complaint to Parkspot in the same year, but nothing was done. My forefathers lived at Klerefontein from the 1600s, but the four strikers did not recognize our title due to that they are granted ownership to William Smith in the 1800s. Who registered this farm in 1860. Our forefathers were reduced to tenants and were taxed for their occupation. In this period, the tribe under the leadership of Gaukwala, with my grandfather, that was in 1886. And then in the second is Tsumangani and Mandris at Mkhalani, were separated and independent and equally in standing. These tribes were consolidated only in 1949 under the leadership of Chief Idimani Pilani, partly because of his cooperation with the apartheid government. The consolidated tribe is today known as Bakhatla Bakhatla. In 1998, my father submitted a claim for Klerefontein in entirety before the subdivision, and it was gazetted in 2005. When we made this claim in 1998, we were asking for the restoration of our land and mineral rights. Because the two go together. We made a claim in 1998 for both. In 2004, The MPRDA was enacted giving the government control of mining rights and providing for the conservation of mineral rights. Although people were allowed to apply for the conversion of old to new other mineral rights, this was advantageous for white landowners and did not help restore black people's mineral rights. The provision did not help those of us who did not have title deeds for our land and therefore ownership for all mineral rights. As people who did not hold mining rights, we could not participate in this process. Now we are told that should our land rights be restored, this will not come with the old mineral rights. This means that we will not have the same opportunity given to white landowners to convert to new mineral rights. The MPRDA was enacted in 2004. What happened to people who submitted their claim before 2004? This act in its current form undercut a land claim we made in 1998. The act fails to take the historically disparities based on colonial and apartheid oppression into consideration. Instead, it treats all landholders the same and does not provide for those who had no title deeds and did not hold mineral rights because of discriminatory laws. In failing to treat black people on communal land as old order mineral rights holders, it excludes them from the transition provision of converting old into new mineral rights, entrenching the importance of racial discrimination. What has happened to mineral rights in the Northwest? Old mining royalty accounts from the Bophuthatswana government have been carried over by the Northwest government. Recent reports about this account, including those by the Northwest government, government acknowledged that the account has not been audited in 18 years, making it impossible to ascertain the amount of money generated from mining royalties due to tribes in the area. Outside of this the account, proceeds from mining investments are held in a web of account that the tribe is not informed of. We have our chief that has traded our mineral rights in the name of the tribe. He has entered into several complicated deals with mining companies. And the proceeds of these deals are encountered for them. The mine operating at Bedrefontein signed a 15-life span when the families of those who occupy the land were not included in this decision. Instead, this decision was made with Hosi, a director on the company's board whose family never occupied the land. The revenue from minerals beneath this land goes to Hosi, and we doesn't see any of the proceedings in our communities. This is one of the issues that surfaced in the corruption trial against Hosi. It has been a thorn in our side for many years. When my father started talking about the corruption several years back, he was fired at Khok as a council at the Khokla of the Bakhatla Bakhafela. Although the Bakhatla Bakhafela Council employed my father on the basis of a resolution, the proceeds from all the infrastructure that we as Mokhabe community have developed on our own land at Selkhabacht, where we have built three schools, a post office, a community hall, and a clinic. The source of income of us all go to the corpus of policy at Morulen in South Point. We have approached various structures to try to solve these problems over the years. Our effort to try and hold Hosi to account has been frustrated by several interdicts preventing us from meeting. We have tried to talk to the premier about this issue and have been stopped time and again. Despite our efforts that included petitions sent to premiers and President Mbeki, protests by the community and letters to state institutions, the Northwest government has consistently said that he has official recognition. We first wrote a letter to Hosi on the 27th July 2009 explaining that Motlhabi community were pulling out of his administration and that from as the 1st of August we would be on our own. Instead of consulting with the community and discussing our reasons for pulling out of his administration, Hosi got an interdict issued against me. I honored him with a letter. He turned around and treated me like a foreigner, or I don't know how to call it. Going against an adage in Setswana that Hosi ke Hosi ka morafe, he undermined and simply ignored our grievances. We also wrote a letter to the chief magistrate, the station commander, the mayor, the chair of the Northwest House of Traditional Leaders, the MEC for Local Housing and Traditional Affairs, as well as the premier, informing them of our desire and intention to establish ourselves as a separate traditional community because of ongoing corruption and the historical problems inherited from apartheid. The Department of Traditional Affairs responded by trying to set up a meeting with Hosi and other neighboring Bakata royal houses at our village on the 18th of December. However, Hosi did not come. The meeting was postponed to the 21st of December and again he had not attended. Instead, officials from Traditional Affairs and the House of Traditional Leaders came and advised us to make an application to the Premier's office. We thus set up a meeting of all our clans for the 6th of February for discussing the issue. Take a formal solution and write this application to the Premier. On the 8th January 2010, I was served with summons stating that Hosi and his traditional council were interdicting me from holding any meetings because I'm planning to discuss confession from the tribe. He called the police to stop the meeting from taking place on the 6th of February. After long court battle, we were able to get this interdict set aside at the Constitutional Court only on the 28th of February this year. This part, the Constitutional Court said the interdict illegally undermined and violated our right of freedom of expression, association, assembly. It is important to allow all voices, also dissenting voice, be heard in a constitutional democracy. In paragraph 35 on the Constitutional Court, customary law was fossilized by apartheid. The Constitution reserved this. Despite the mineral wells beneath the land originally owned by our forefathers, at Motlhabi remains impoverished and excluded from mining activities happening on behalf of their forefathers' land. Let that we have claimed the provision of the MPRDA not only undercuts only claim for land, but also strips us of the mineral rights that were so connected to the land. Meanwhile, mining companies continue to enter into business deals with Houthi, who have consistently failed to account for the proceedings of these business deals. On the basis of the official recognition he enjoys from the Northwest government, he is party to mining deals as a representative of a tribe that independently purchased the land on which these mines operate. The possibility of restoration has the promise of owing the right to the minerals beneath our forefathers' land. But this has been undercut by the MPRDA punishing us more under the power of a counter
culture.
Thank you.
Honourable members and our guests, forgive me for giving him extra time. When a person is bothered up, we need to give that person time to cough out so that he or she can be heard. That presentation is by Franz Dampfer, and thank you very much. I will now call on CPA International Leaders presenter, Satana Madule.
Instead of occupying the 23, 26,000 hectares, we occupy
The rest were occupied by other communities who were removed from other areas that I wouldn't like to talk about. Most surprisingly is that when we were dumped in that area, given attempt to build, to stay for 14 days irrespective of how many households are there, you'll understand that when we divide the household, is that within a small enterprise called a family, there must be four households there. Where a father and mother, my father and my mother, my brother whom I married, were staying in the same tent for 14 days. With, despite the fact of the argument that was said by the NPP, there is another traditional authority that is claiming us as his subject. And after all, he also perpetuated the whole issue of the removal because he once said that, I quote, bring me these people closer to me so that I may be able to rule them. But let me thank this new government, because with a new constitution, we were able to claim that land. The very same traditional leaders, in the name of the Minga traditional authority, who by then, the late chief Adolf Minga was the minister of justice in the then defunct Gazakul government, used his power, of course, to declare us as his subjects. And that was only realized in 1976, when the present Chief Makuleke was installed not as a chief but as a headman under the jurisdiction of Chief Minga. We fought against that up until today, and we're still fighting against that. When we claim our land, there were those who objected the land. After all, you cannot avoid people to object. And among others was Chief Minga, with the present acting Chief Cedric Minga. And the basis of this objection was that these are my own subjects. Instead of them being claiming that area, I should be the one claiming because they are falling under me. Let me say that all the objections were withdrawn, even the ones by the Minga traditional authority. And in 1998, the land claim was awarded. We signed an agreement with nearly all the departments in this country. And the land has been declared, the committee decided to declare the land as part of Kruger National Park. And that is the reason why we are contributing to the number of jobs that we have to create in this country as a call of our president. Because through the retaining of that land as a conservation area, we embark on ecotourism businesses. I mean, if the community is able to employ 100 young people, even including elderly people, women, yes, women and men. I mean, we have done justice to our own committee, and we are contributing to the call of president in terms of creating more jobs in this country, including myself. I'm working there. Allow me to indicate that the CPA, which is functional even today, and I'm very proud that this is the same community which challenged the government on the issue of flood. And we can still challenge the government if policies that will affect us are passed out, that we realize it will affect us. The question is, it doesn't matter whether we win or not, the fact that we will have our concern. was in support of Clara was to say that once, if ever we have lost, we have lost against, I mean, in terms of argument, that would mean that they will have a momentum to come and claim the ownership of the CPA. And we will not be having anything. And we said we shall fight until the last drop of our blood. Honorable Chairperson, this issue of saying that we want, this government wants to undo with the CPA will do a lot of harm even to the Makulage people. There will be a social, what we call a social disorder. And I wouldn't expect this ANC-led government to create another social disorder within the Makulage people. Because somebody will come and take and annex everything, all the resources that we have accumulated through that land. And let me also indicate that we are in a good relationship with our traditional leaders. I mean, there's a good relationship between the Makulage CPA and the traditional leadership at Makulage. And for your information, at one stage, Chief Makulage was a chairperson of the CPA. Unfortunately, we thought it was, because as a chairperson, you lead the variety of people, because people cannot, community cannot be homogeneous. And as such, we said in a mass meeting, we would like the chief to be in loggerheads with whoever, young and old, to challenge the chief in that respect. And that, it was not to say that we are in loggerheads with the traditional leadership. That is because, as such, that was a decision taken by the royal family to say we need to protect our traditional leadership. Chairperson, I understand that there is this call, as was presented also yesterday, about the whole issue of the land tenure system. Presented by the DG, and I like that. But my fear is that I'm not sure, Chairperson, if the proposed policies on communal land tenure should be seen in the context of what James Ferguson says in his book, The Anti-Politics Machine. I'm not sure. Development, depolitization, and bureaucratic power in this world. The whole issue of unintended consequences. Because when you read this document as was presented to us yesterday, indirectly it brings back the Clara that has been striped off. We ask the ANC-led government to take a heed of what we call the number of CPAs who their land, their agreement has been concluded, but they're still waiting for their land. You talk about the Dresser Square of this country. You talk about the the Makatanis. You talk about the Makahanis, Martengas, all these people. Their claims have been validated and agreements have been signed, but they're still waiting for the transfer of the land. And if the whole issue of transfer of the land is triggered by the call by our traditional leaders, either in the, through the National House of Traditional Leaders or Council Letter, I'm scared that where are we going with our country? Because the transfer of the land to this CPA
1968 is within the constitution and within the politics of this country. In other words, we are saying this government is not tired, it's not getting tired to be taken to court. Because as much as we stand, this community can take this government to court, and the community can win. In conclusion, we ask our intimate government to listen to our voices. We ask the intimate government to respect the traditional leaders we choose and the CPA that we and other communities have formed to protect our rights. We ask the intimate government that they do not look us into lock us into boundaries of the old Pakistan and put us directly under the authority of chiefs like the niggers that we don't want. For information, let me indicate that for the past 18 years we are waiting for the outcome. Actually, the government failed to implement the outcome of the Ramsar Commission, a commission which was appointed by the government. The outcome was there, it was not implemented. The opinion was taken to the SAPO Commission. It was not dealt with that. Another commission today, maybe it will go on another commission. So this issue of keeping on transferring the opinion of the Ramshire to commission to another commission, I think we're sick and tired. And we're not saying we cannot vote, we're going to vote. Lastly, we ask that this internet government should bear in mind that the concerns when they go about drafting legislation and should consult us properly and in a transparent manner during this process that care.
Thank you very much, Tatana Maluleke, for the presentation. Can I now call the last speaker from Women's Land Rights, Me Zani Ngureni. You know, I'm so happy because the person who's going to close this workshop is a mala or mati.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Suzanne Kubane. I'm with the Rural Women's Movement as its founder and its director. The movement is based in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. It's an independent organization tackling issues around women's land, property and inheritance rights. We seek to eliminate poverty and to enhance women's effective participation in local government. RWM advocates for women's independent land rights. I'm saying church, independent land rights, because up to today, in KwaZulu-Natal, most of the chiefs are not allocating land to women in their own right as women. If I were to be allocated land, I have to be represented by my grandson, by male relatives. And we are saying that is not in line with the constitution of our country. My experience, Church, and the experience of the members of the RWM is that the legacy of the Land Act and other related colonial and apartheid laws and policies have left women's rights to land in rural areas precarious, in some cases placing us into difficult situations where no solutions exist in law or practice. The primary reason is that women in rural areas largely live on land ruled by the traditional authorities. Land falling into this category is shrouded in uncertainty as to ownership, the right, if any, to allocate land, and the right of current occupiers of the land. This situation is complicated by the role of chiefs, some of whom claim complete control over the land share. The Constitution specifically addresses this legacy by requiring that Parliament enact legislation that would facilitate redress any person who is there in Kenya is insecure as a result of past racial heat, discrimination laws or practices. As the members are aware, Parliament's first attempt to give effect to this provision was CLARA, which was struck down by the Constitutional Court in 2010. Rather than rectifying the other power imbalances, typifying communally held land, the law exacerbated the problem of some chiefs acting as a law unto themselves. Despite assurances to the court by the minister that new constitutionally sound legislation will soon replace the CLARA, there has been no progress in this regard to date. With an absence of law to govern the matter, access to land in rural areas then depends on local power relations. Single women, particularly those without male family members, have little status in the eyes of some traditional leaders and their structures. Chair, I will make an example of one of RWM members who has struggled for decades to gain access to the land left to her in a will by her father. She has been constantly and violently blocked from the land by the half-brother and the local chief, acting in collusion. The local chief went so far as to call her father mad for having left the land to his daughter when he had a living son. Once a fertile sugarcane farm, her land has reportedly been rented to people who have built an informal settlement. Meanwhile, she lives alone in Krugersdorp. Unable to work after a car accident that left her disabled, she lives off the charity of others. She has no mechanism in law to access the land, and pleas to the Commission for Gender Equality have fallen on deaf ears. Chair, we are very concerned about the new practice in KwaZulu-Natal where our traditional leaders are allocating edible agricultural land and changing them, turning them into residential land. We don't have that much agricultural land, but they are demarcating it into residential areas and selling it to the members of the community. Another RWM member who was born in 1928 to Mama Kazile Hageve. She's a widow and has been unable to enforce her rights against neighbors who drive their cattle to graze in her garden. In her family, for generations, the land around her house was once a productive garden. On it, she has grown maize, beans, pumpkins, sweet potatoes, spinach, tomatoes, onions, citrus. She produced not only enough for her kitchen, but also to sell her surplus, to compensate her grants, her social grants from the government. The neighbor's cattle have destroyed her garden. It is now a dry patch of land. Receiving no local support from her traditional leader, she took the matter to the traditional council in a traditional court. In this area in which the cattle owners live. There she was told that her matter cannot be tackled because the court does not speak to women. And she does not have a male relative to represent her in a traditional court. So rather than rectifying this situation, Parliament has instead exacerbated women's tenure insecurity through the adoption of new laws that entrench patriarchal power relations. These include the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003 and the Traditional Court Bill. The recently tabled Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Bill once again skews the balance of power in favor of the chief. The lack of gender security means that women will once again lose out and open the floodgates for chiefs claiming ownership of land. This is not mere speculation. Days after the bill's introduction, we had King Goodwin Zwelithini told a group of traditional leaders in KwaZulu-Natal that the Ingonyama Trust would assist traditional leaders in instituting land claims, including the provision of legal aid. He said he would regain all Zulu land. Such claims are in keeping with current practice in the province in which we work. Chair, in KwaZulu-Natal, we have 300 chiefs. Not all of them are recognized as chiefs. Some of them, if not most of them, impose themselves on communities. I will make an example of a community called Matiwanipo. This community is based at the Tshukela district of KwaZulu-Natal. The community land was bought in 1823 by a group of 120 men who organized themselves into a syndicate called the Matiwane Management and Syndicate Committee. The syndicate then elected Mr. Mbewa to be the leader. He was the chairperson, not the traditional leader of the whole community and not the community. The title deed for this land was received by the committee in 2007 after an intense struggle. After the death of Mbewa, his son Tananiso started imposing himself as a chief of a community, even though this was private land. The current traditional leader belongs to the fourth generation of the leadership, flowing from the original imposition. The chief is also a member of KwaZulu-Natal provincial legislature. And before that, he was a local school principal. Our real life situation on the ground. The chief unilaterally controls community resources and access to them. In most instances, where there are projects that the rural women have initiated without him, for example, the sewing machine project, the chief tries to frustrate the project and threatens to take away the resources that are needed for the project, e.g. sewing machine. This is because he feels like he has no control over the project and the money involved. And some of the project resources that the chief wanted to take away, initiated by the rural women of the community, were donated by the surface project of the American consulate, who also supported the group of local women to build a house to work from. In 2001, the chief appointed 19 people at the traditional authority to run the traditional court on the basis that he had dreamt about that particular composition. Of the 19 people appointed, only 6 of them were women, and one of the women was forced to quit after realizing that their voice as the members of the traditional council was not taken seriously. The chief has continued with the procedure of appointing such traditional authority and has not appointed a traditional council in terms of the traditional leadership and governance framework act of 2003. The conduct at the court is that if one is a woman, one may not represent herself in the court or witness court. A man must represent her. Women in this community feel that this is against the human rights and the constitution that we have fought for, that we have fought so hard for and for which our ancestors passed on. In the case of the widow, she is not even allowed to enter the premises of the court because it is believed she will bring bad spirit to the court. Justice in the traditional court is dependent on who you are, your resources, and your status in the community. If you have a lot of resources and unknown, you can buy the people in charge a bottle of expensive alcohol or pay them money, or in your case, can be thrown out of court. Where there is a dispute between a woman and a man about who the father of a child is, the court will order a blood test to be done and the father's family must pay a fine of 1 cow or 1,000 rand. The fine is not paid to the syndicate, who is the owner of the private land, but it will be paid to the chief. where there is a case of trespassing that still, there will be a fine of one cow or a bull or 1,000 rand to be paid to the chief and not to the person whose field has been destroyed by the livestock. In other instances, the trespassing livestock may be impounded by the owner of the field where the livestock trespassed. Then the owner will charge a fee for the release of the animal. Sometimes the chief will come to the court and say the fee is too high and decide that a total fine must be paid of about 1,000 rand. The problem is that the chief does not know what damage is done by the livestock to the field. He is not an expert on this. When a widow performs her cleansing ritual of taking her mourning dress off, she is expected by the chief to either provide meat and liquor for him, or she is summoned to go to court where she will pay a fine of 120 rand. Community members who are performing rituals involving the slaughter of a cow at their own household are expected to provide special meat, liquor for the chief, or they pay a fine of 200 rand. Here we are talking about the chief who earns a salary as a member of KwaZulu-Natal legislature, demanding these payments from members of the community whose majority are only dependent on the government grant, mainly child grant, which is only 270 rand a month. He is selling the land belonging to the syndicate without their consent. Given these findings on the barriers in accessing full and equal participation in traditional courts and systems, discrimination based on gender faced by women in rural areas, the pieces of legislation like traditional court fee does not adequately or specifically address such problems to successfully align the traditional justice system with our constitution. I will tackle a few issues about CPA. The CPA has two projects, that is the CPA in Kwanobana. From these two projects, they are faced with problems emanating from a Nobamba traditional authority, interference in their affairs and the running of their organization. Their frustrations involve Induna as part of the beneficiaries, squatting people on their land without their consent. One of the of them is a chief from Maasai Veni traditional council. He has not followed the proper channels per their constitution and has placed himself on their farm. That was in April last year. The CPA is currently begging to raise funds to pay attorneys to initiate a legal action. Last year, this chief came with the Department of Land Affairs as well as KwaZulu-Natal legislature to hold a meeting without their knowledge. That was on March 11th. And that meeting was held on their farm without their knowledge. Chair, I'm very glad that you are saying the session, or that in your opening of this session, you said our presentations are not going to be challenged outside of this house. We have had a situation where we came for the traditional court fee public hearings last year. I can't remember whether it was September or, yeah. And our chairperson was summoned by the chief to appear in a traditional court for the issues that came out of the RWM submission here in Parliament. And he was not in Parliament. It is Chief Madala, who is a member of KwaZulu-Natal legislature, who took our submission and gave it to him. Unkosi Shabalala told our chairperson, Umama Shabalala, that he had the recording of what Umama Shabalala said in the RWM submission. We need the protection of this court, because some of the chiefs, like Omandala or Shabalala, are trying to silence the rural women's movement. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mama, for your presentation. Honourable members and our guests, I just want to give a directive here that the three presentations made by Makuleke and Dati Pilani, no Mawala, honourable to engage them. Those were informative. That was informative information. We're only going to engage with the presentation of can we engage with the presentation? Two presentations. Honorable Stain, honorable comrade there, honorable Beke. Yes. Chairperson. That is it, Mamika. DG. Okay, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to comment on the what is happening at the last three presentations. I think we've heard it in the past. I was thinking while I was sitting here, Chairperson, if obviously it depends on which area, on which tribal community, there must be good and bad examples. I was just wondering if someone has done a study on what is happening in a tribal area where there is progress in sense of better economic development, things that's happening, happiness, people are generally working together. Because I'm thinking of 10-year reform. We obviously can't have one-size-fits-all at this stage. Is there examples of areas where it's better? Why it's better? What are the reasons for that? Is it linked to economic development? Is it linked to something else? So that we can start also, someone said on land reform, we must do some kind of test pilot sites and see, you know, in certain areas what kind of land reform projects we can bring, because it can't be the same everywhere. And so on the tribal land, I think, Chairperson, we need to look for examples of things that work and what is it that make it work in certain areas. So that we can also sit down, but my concern, Chair, is still I don't think we hear enough from the communities themselves. The fact that we're always having discussions in the base in Cape Town and Parliament, there are representatives coming, but I don't think we hear enough of the voices of the people themselves in the area. And that was my concern during the farm workers strike, Chairperson. We are discussing on behalf of people, and we don't go to the communities themselves. So I think that is part of what we are going to do in this process this year, that we actually go to the communities and find out from themselves. Because that's what I'm thinking, is that we will get different stories from different areas. So we must look for best examples. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. I want to raise two things. One is that from the presentation yesterday up to today, what became more evident is that the land was taken forcibly from the authorities, without any form of compensation. I would think that yesterday is the clause on the property that seeks to prevent the property that offers those that have it now. But the essence is that if you have taken a land from the people without their consent, it is tantamount and there are a number of other people subsequently who bought land which was initially stolen. And if you are stealing, you are buying a stolen goods, you are equally a culprit. I think that's the premise around which I want to move. But I want to say that the ruling party, knowing that there is that kind of a situation, and with this law, property law that seeks to protect, I think by now, if it has not dawned to say that the position of how land could be released in the manner in which it is proposed now, which is actually a compromise, and it should expedite that those that have land should be able to release it as soon as possible. And to release it to whom? I'm getting to the question that has been raised by Conference. We're saying the land must be released to the chiefs. I'm saying the institution that is actually in place now is that we have a democratic government. And if land is released to be redistributed, it must be released to the state and not to the traditional leaders. In fact, if you go through the constitution, it says they operate subject to the constitution themselves. And therefore, the role that chiefs have to play, I think must be also subject to the constitution, because they are not democratically elected. They are there by birth. I think as they have repeatedly indicated that. Now, I want to say to the president of the Ghanaian chiefs today that the position that he is taking may be too radical, that we do not want that institution, because it is after lengthy debate that it was finally agreed that they are recognized on the basis of this constitution. So chiefs have a right as well, and they have a role within our own society. Thank you.
Thank you. Come back to thank you. Can we make it smart by not taking too long? No, then, Chairperson, you told us that the three inputs are not going to interact. But what I would propose is that the cry here in this highest legislative institution, hoping that the DG and the portfolio and the select committee will put mechanisms in place in terms of how do they single out these issues that are crying about government, and try to mediate so that at least they understand. And then two, I would then also on the issue of the tension which flows from the DG's input yesterday and all these inputs that you're having, the tensions between the municipality and the traditional leaders. I think going forward towards the next administration, we also need to look into that to say where do we have to strengthen our legislation and put in other enabling legislation to try and mediate to that. Lastly, in Gauteng we don't have traditional land. However, there are hostels where Isindunas still rule over the tenants. And government renovated hostels to be households where they can live with their families, very much beautiful. However, the main white elephant
advising the tenants don't go there. But at the same time, you find that they complain that government doesn't do anything. So, also those things in terms of the power, they transfer the power from wherever they come from, and then bar development. Thank you.
Not the chairperson. Mama, yeah. Swati after Swati, please. Maybe this month.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is with regards to the third presentation. I think what we as legislators need to actually check is to look at all laws that entrench apartheid laws to be scrapped. I think that way we could also help. And the cries of ordinary people on the ground, I think we should just hear those cries. And the other issue is with regard to the land claims. I think there was a question which was saying who owned the land. I think this question must be asked who claims the land. Because the person who claimed the land must be the person who owned the land at the end. And another one, the last one is with regard to the property clause. I think this is very imperative. This is very important. It's a very important constitutional imperative. Because even if you claim a land, you will want that land to be protected. If you have got a property, at the end you will want that property to be protected. But what is going to happen if that property you claim is not protected because you don't have a title deed or you don't have any document that is protecting your right? I think all those very important things are the things that we need as legislatures to very, 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 very much carefully at least make sure that even if we change or amend some of the laws, we need to take into cognizance that we protect all those things. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Let me assure you that amongst us, we have got our legal staff here who are noting each and every input in this workshop. So they are noting everything.
Chair, mine is very, very short. I think I've been covered by Honourable Pinky about the tussle between the municipality and the traditional authorities. I think that's the tabby head of development in the communities, because it's not the municipal council, are the councillors themselves who come to a traditional authority, want to start a development. When it comes to when they have difficulties, then they run to the traditional leader. Meanwhile, they should have altogether agreed, yes, the project that has to be developed here, they are there for development, but the Makotis are there for land use. Then I just want to remark to what Yakoshi Makero was saying, that he's right. We need to have an honorable thinking and enabling legislation that really stipulates the right of councillors and traditional leaders. And I wish all traditional leaders could treat the people in their territory not as servants. In my community, they are citizens, as bestowed by the Constitution. Why must you say they are servants? I wish that can be taken by all traditional authorities who want to, in the good of the people. Another thing for Koshi Makero, he spoke of the communities not being, you know, involved in the making of the legislation. It's quite true, but I want to commend the work that is done by the NCOP here, because when they go out, they really try to tell the people what's happening. If they don't do enough, we want to encourage Parliament to do more than what they're doing now. And just what the Legal Resource Center says, you know, the Constitution does not actually spell the powers of the traditional leaders. I think I was one of the people when we were doing the CODESA 1 and CODESA 2. That was a complaint that if you don't spell out the powers of the traditional leaders, what is going now, that is happening, that this council is in the council and the traditional leadership. We also wish to say that this could be directed to COPTA. I think that the people who can try and harmonize. And we spoke of a living customary law, which I think it is a custom that is being used at the time. We do have customs, but some of them tend to get incorporated to the customs that are being used now. So really, we agree with you that there should be now observed. sort of the weight of taxpayers' money, because those commissions, there was never a report. The SACO commission, no report. We don't know what about this product commission. That's why you find there's a lot of confusion. Who is a king, who is a chief, who is a leader, and so on, who wish to. It's a wrong platform. But I think what the person who mentioned about this commission, which government, yes, I think we need to get out of it. And when we're the commission, we must see to it that the results are published for everyone to know, everyone to see. In fact, the chairperson said we should not comment about the Mahulete, but I just want in half a minute to say that the Alishun Bandoksona is correct. My community has been touched with the Mahulete Commission, the Mahulete Traditional Council. I wish all CPAs could do like you do. I know they are doing so well, there are no squabbles, but I've been involved in some CPAs where when I was a member of parliament going for oversight reasons. You see that they start with a project and along the line it collapses because everybody at night takes a bed to go and, you know, plug up the mangoes to come home, the other one goes and takes the resources at night. And then they start fighting who is senior. But maybe the CPA could be improved in a way that we have less tension. Finally, so the chairperson, the woman, National Movement of Rural Women, I happen to have a chance to one day addressing the National Movement of Rural Women. I want to say to the women who are oppressed, I said, maybe the Gender Commission could help, not with the other things, could help. And even that the legal resource center could help, so that you don't just cry and there's nowhere to go. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Emma, please.
Thank you for the challenges. My colleagues take my mind too, but what I also can say to the House, I'm glad to belong to the organization that you know the people in the right. Because some of the people that are oppressed by their organization, they are people who lead their other organizations. Because they don't want to give women a chance to express their rights. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mom Kid. Baba, we are having a show note. Okay, Baba. Baba Mahmoud. Yebo, Rosianne.
Okay, thank you very much. It's not a question that we would not like to participate, but we see the way things are going is okay. But however, my contribution would be, I just wish if ever, when we wrap up this workshop, I think we should come out with one common thing to say. What we are facing here is to do away probably by this notorious native language, which is causing so many things that we are debating about. Others are talking about sectors such as departments, others are talking about traditional authorities, others are talking about things, farmers and so on and so on. If you check, all these things is happening just because there is no space, there is no land for us to do whatever we think we should be doing. When people are talking about this traditional institution and leadership, it seems as if it is something that has been created by those people that are called traditional leadership. They are being, you know, dumped in a dry area, where now if you look, the area is densely populated. There's no more space even for the grazing. But people are standing and are accusing traditional authorities and saying, we don't want to give land. From where do we get land? Because the land is still standing with those who have the power. So if you look in the agricultural again, people are blaming each other, the commercial and the imaging and all those kind of things. But the fact is, let's face the root cause of all these things that we're talking about, land issue. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you. DG.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Just a comment.
and the plea, I think in the yesterday, Dr. Mbeki said when making his submission, when he was dealing with the issue of the CPA, he suggested that if something is not working, you don't just simply discard it and throw it away, you fix it. That was in reference to the CPA. I hope maybe there's something to learn in this particular area on this question of the 1951 legislation. Madam Chair, the presentation we made yesterday seems to have achieved its objective. We know exactly where we stand, and the feedback we're getting is encouraging us to move on, to engage. But I think we shouldn't lose the momentum. We need to say, how do we give effect to Chapter 12 of the Constitution? Because we can't, in 100 years on of the 1913 Land Act, argue that we must retain the status quo of the homelands as they remain, and the state continues to be a nanny state for those people whom we say are very independent people, can make their own decisions, and yet we are saying the current democratic state must continue to hold land on their behalf as if they are minors. So I'm calling Chairperson for a serious engagement around this particular issue. Let us not leave it unresolved. Let's confront it, let's deal with it, and move on. So that way we'll be able to deal with the ghost of Clara that seems to be haunting some of us.
Thank you, DG. I think it's now time for Legal Resource Center and National House of Transnationals to respond on some of the issues that are raised.
Perhaps we should go first so that the chief can clean the floor with us. Yes, and have the last word, as it should be according to custom.
And let me just say, our traditional is no longer to be called chief. So what I can meet with the colleagues, they have our issue.
Oh, it's the ANC chief.
No, the traditional leaders or in court or Marena.
Yeah. Or Musanda,
or
Ndavezi, or Mawa. Well, as in gold, and have the last word. We don't say that, you know, the institution itself shouldn't exist. I mean, we can't say that because the institution exists, recognized by the Constitution. The real conversation is really, now that the Constitution says traditional leaders should exist, but it also provides for one-to-one municipalities and provides that the role and status of traditional leaders should be in accordance with customary law. Those two should be taken seriously. The one-to-one municipality should be taken seriously, and customary law itself should be taken seriously. And customary law is not customary law as codified by colonial authorities and entrenched by apartheid authorities. Living customary law is what people do on the ground on a daily basis. I mean, we've had some of the people we've asked for the rural women's movement, Makulele community. These are people that we've done well who tell us that actually what we see manifested in legislation or in codes or in regulation is inconsistent with what we do on a daily basis. So what we're asking Parliament to do is to investigate the meaning of living customary law on community by community basis. It's a massive undertaking, but it is nevertheless an important undertaking that must be done. And this applies also in relation to the DG's point. I mean, DG, we want to work with the department. I mean, we want to help fix things. We don't just want to go to court and challenge them on the ground of unconstitutionality, but we are sometimes compelled to do so because we don't get the results that we think comply with the Constitution. So that also applies to this issue about a boundaries and to the issue about tenure. If this we actually investigated on a community by community basis, some of these problems that seem intractable at this stage, we would find the answers residing with the people and not with the academic experts. The question about, well, I mean, should we not first address the problem of
landlessness before we address the current problems. I mean, I don't know, presumably that is a political question, but it doesn't seem to me a logical thing to do to say that until I have addressed the effects of the 1913 land act, I cannot deal with the daily problems that people encounter on the ground. It just doesn't seem to us that it is a responsible stance to take. We agree that ultimately you need a wide-ranging legislation to resolve some of these underlying structural problems, but that doesn't mean that today, when there is a tension about the allocation of land and the exercise of power between municipalities and chiefs, the parliament must simply remain supine. Now, yes, this is an important observation, this observation about servants versus citizens, because it is central to the work that we are trying to do. A, it's about completing the project of democratization. And part and parcel of apartheid or colonialism was indirect role, the appointment of illegitimate traditional leaders and imposed on communities. Everybody who has ever had anything to do with traditional leaders, certainly in the Transkei, knows the tensions emanating from the Matanzima and the Sabata Dalindyebo situation of the 1980s. And so today when we hear that Matanzima actually the legitimate king of the all of the Amatemu, everyone who has any sense of history knows that actually that is to falsify the true historical position. So nobody actually can ever claim that traditional leaders have always been illegitimate. The point that we have made in relation to the 1951 legislation is that it entrenches an apartheid era mentality and it continues to exist even with our own parliament. And that's what we are asking parliament to do. It is to scrap Section 28 of the Framework Act because it perpetuates an apartheid regime. And that's what we are asking to do. There are many other things that parliament has done which is to reverse the consequences of the apartheid legal order, and we are not asking those to be changed. But it's absolutely vital to remain focused on the true issue, which is actually this is about, this is Mahmoud Mamdani's point about citizens and subjects. It's about making people that were made subjects into citizens. Many people living in villages and in the rural areas, certainly in the Transkei where I come from, still feel like subjects, and they do not yet feel that they have been converted to citizens by their own democratic establishment. So at the heart of it, it's completing the project of democratization so that you can actually give effect to the right of citizenship, which people do not experience simply because they live in traditional communities. So, yes, Vijay, we've got to think about how to give effect to Chapter 12 of the Constitution. And we are actually encouraged that our responses have encouraged you, and hopefully your officials will follow up with the grand undertakings that we have made today.
Thank you very much. Question ahead.
Thank you. Once more, Program Director. I agree more with the lady over there that are better examples than good examples of various categories of leadership, including traditional leaders. I challenge Parliament to undertake a study, starting from those serving as members. I can, from where I sit, which sort of point are that Hosni Mametuan and then Hosni Mahmoud, whom I personally know and work with, are leaders of high standing. Allegations that have been laid against traditional leadership will not find space in Hosni Mametuan and Hosni Mahmoud. And many others serving in this August House. I agree the bad examples. People may operate on the same basis of law whether customarily or otherwise. But the individual makeup, personalities, brings out the difference. We can't go to the extent of painting people with the same brush. Traditional leadership has transformed tremendously over the years. Not because the law requires as such, but because circumstances on the ground have changed. Traditional leadership has never been steady. It has developed as people and times change. They believe that since traditional leadership is acquired through heredity, to some people that makes them undemocratic. It's unfortunate. Customary law is recognized by law, by custom constitution. Therefore, acquiring of traditional leadership status through customary law is not wrong. The operations are underpinned by customary law, which is subjected to the constitution. Therefore, the assertion that it cannot be given some responsibilities, including administration or ownership of communal land, to me is untrue. But I agree that we're all trying to find a common platform. There will always be a difference of opinion. The word subject is not our, is not in our vocabulary. It's somebody's subject, somebody's name or its name. We don't have subjects in traditional authorities or communities. Not but Varena. We don't own people. Khosi Pilane would say when referring to his people, not his own people. Hosi Mamwedo will say it differently. But commonly at the bottom, we would find that it's a collection of people, not subject. The word subject is foreign. I still repeat that Parliament needs to get it from the horse mouth. And the horse does not reside here in Cape Town, does not drink from the pond in Cape Town. In all or in most public hearings, Parliament is subjected to one view of those people who are able to come or rendered. It's time to get to the pool where the horses turn. Thank you.
Thank you, Hoshi Mafiru. Before calling on Honorable Sudani to come, I just want also to acknowledge that it's not each and every traditional leader who is bad. I was fortunate to be in charge of traditional leadership for 5 years in Limpopo. I was also fortunate to install Hoshi Mafiru
as a traditional leader. I was the first person in South Africa as a woman to close initiation schools with the support of these traditional leaders. As a woman. So I also like to say it differs from area or from province to province. Or from monkeys, what do you think? It differs. So I'll agree with Hoshi and Makhero to say we should not paint everybody with that paint, black paint, whatever you call it, or white paint. And honestly saying, it's not everybody. They are the rotten apples, my apology. They are the, in brackets, and I, from the pop, I know who are they. But otherwise, a lot of them are too cooperative. The only thing that they need is just to respect them. And I always say to them, I don't lose anything for respecting them. And I used to kneel when talking to them. I used to dress properly when going to their meetings. Because that is the most important thing. And I had a way of addressing them. And by doing that, you don't lose anything in life. And by saying I'm sorry to them, if you wrong them, you don't lose anything in life. So let us not paint everybody. Those are my closing remarks. And before calling on Honorable Suzanne, I'd like to thank honorable members who are here, DGs who are here, department officials, legal staff from parliament, traditional leaders, academics, farmers, NGOs, activities, and our guests, not forgetting our staff. Thank you very much. And take care when going back home. And God be with you and God will protect you. Thank you very much.
There's also an indication that the
PowerPoint presentations that will have been presented here will also be available for distribution, and some of them have already been handed out. So we will insist that the process is concluded properly with the seriousness it deserves. We have, whilst we are waiting for the decision as to when the debate will take place, we will engage with our provincial counterparts so that those provinces that have not undertaken this process will undertake it. And those that are finding it difficult to do so, we will assist. We are not experts ourselves, I'm sure you may have noticed, but we have a fullest meaning to get to where we need to get to. We want to make a contribution to this nation for those things that are not nice to have, but we need to have, including the solution to the land problem in South Africa. Many people spoke here. Let me start with the first one, because that was the first item on the agenda, the communal land tenure. Key issue arising out of the presentation is titling of that land. There are various permutations trying to come to grips with how we title that land. There are people who feel it should be freehold. There are others who feel that it should be individual households. And I want to use Professor Cousins' words, nested in the community of family. We have to pursue this discussion until we get consensus. We also hope that you will go back where you come from, whether you are in the national house or traditional leaders. It is because it is not enough to say there are bad examples of the kings and chiefs. There has to be a uniformity of the application within which customary law should live and breathe. If there is no law, it will definitely be subjected to abuse. And another matter that really must be taken to the house of traditional leaders. I don't know in other parts of the country, but in Transkei, you were not able to assume leadership of your tribe unless you've gone to school. There was a school of traditional leaders. Wherever they taught there, I don't know the content, but you have to graduate there before you can assume your leadership. I think the House of Traditional Leaders should consider that. I'm not suggesting that the ones that are there are not, they do not know what they are doing. Like you said, even though there may be rules regulating the way you conduct yourself as a servant of your people, there are those people whose personalities overtake them to make them feel they are the bosses of the people, not the servants. And we end up having this kind of chaos where in other parts of the country. There is absolutely no reason why a horse should be a stumbling block for development taking place in their own area. I don't understand. How do you think they will feel obligated to respect and honor you if you do not want their conditions to be improved? There is the issue of subjects and citizens. I think this issue of subject will be clarified when you deal with this legislation that governs the conduct of traditional leaders. There's a constitutional gap in the absence of a law that's required by the constitution to deal with what Clara was attempting to do. And therefore, DG, I know that the minister is considering various permutations. I think the working groups that are taking place at a national level may result in some form of consensus so that the whole of the nation can debate this issue of customary, living customary law, not a stagnant one. Because when people think about tradition, they think about something that we used to do way back, instead of how custom must govern how we behave. Steve Trader used to say, it's the imbeko iyamakha, okanye iintloni ziyamakha umntu. I don't know how to say it in Sesotho because it escapes me. But if you have respect, you can benefit by respect bestowed upon you. You really have to deserve it. The staff has urged me. They say I've got a long stomach. I have no intention of being too verbose, but I think my responsibility is to summarize those issues that emanated over a period of 2 days. And the next issue is the issue of the contrasting of traditional councils and CPAs. The people who feel CPAs are disrespectful of traditional leaders, and therefore depriving the traditional council of the responsibility to have the jurisdiction over the area, and people under the CPA are advocating the abolition of CPAs and vice versa. Some CPAs are saying, we can respect you as our ceremonial leader, but let us get on with our business of development. We need to find synergy between the two. Key underlying all this debate, I'm sure many of you must have noticed this, the biggest chunk of debate that has taken place yesterday and today was about land in communal areas. But the biggest underlying factor in that matter is the fact that women's rights are being violated by even our very protectors of women. I am so shocked to hear that the Commission of Gender Equality is ignoring calls for it to intervene in certain situations. DG, you have got a huge task, but we promise the Parliament will support it. The recommendations are that we must find alternatives to what is not working. Keep what is working and let it go. Let the people benefit from it, but kick out that which is not working. DG, you have the green paper. Perhaps we need to the next round of the joint portfolio committees with the stakeholders that we have is to look at that work that you're doing. We're not denying the fact that it's the responsibility of the department to engage with all stakeholders, but I think we are stakeholders of Parliament, and therefore to expose us to that will help a great deal to give you feedback as well. It also helps that we will not get into this matter cold by the time it comes to Parliament. There is a huge agitation about proper planning and zoning. You will be shocked to hear, Chief, I'm addressing my chief from Mafasa. I received an SMS this week of a CEO of the development agency in Nelson Mandela Metro. Now, a CEO there at that level reports directly to the MM. All the other Section 54 managers cannot tell him what to do. But he says, please help us. We can't get zoning to be passed because we lack leadership at that level. It's my town where I come from. Let alone somebody living in the rural area who needs this kind of support. We have been talking to colleagues that come from the provincial legislatures during this 1.5 days. they're talking about the slum being stuck at NCOP. We have been begging them, please pass it. They say there are areas where people have not been consulted properly in the provinces. They are insisting that it will not go to the NCOP for passing until they have considered it. I don't know how long it will take, but the bill is stuck there. Currently, zoning is taking place under the laws and bylaws from the provinces. This piece of paper is going to be circulated for everybody to see. I don't think I should write or read all of them. I can circulate them. Because to force people to listen to me when they want to go is a very thorny issue for me. But I want to summarize the last bit of what we need to do as the joint committee. In Parliament, we've got the Rural Development and Land Reform Portfolio Committee. We've got COPTA, Public Works, Arts and Culture, Agriculture. We have been trying to recruit human settlement. You remember you saw our chair. So the resolution of Parliament, I don't remember them being included. They have been included eventually. They have been. So we're six committees. Our responsibility is to conduct this thing at a national level, as we're doing now. Odijge is saying to me, don't call me to Parliament during this process. Call me to sessions of this nature. Because policy is suffering at a departmental level because you are distracting us, you are taking us to Parliament all the time to talk about the day-to-day issues. I will send you the manager to come to you, but let me focus on this thing. We have agreed with the DG that we will set up at a parliamentary level an oversight joint committee of these six portfolio committees to attend to this process. Parallel to that, we will have a working group. We will invite more people to focus on what those issues will be and relevant to them. But we want a working group to deal with the issues that have emanated from this thing. We'll call all the stakeholders to undertake this particular task so that we can provide solutions to the department. And perhaps in some situations, we may have to go for individual member, what is the private member motions or private member bills in Parliament. But immediately we will tackle three things among us, among the three committees, six committees. First one will be the Northwest issue. We hear that everybody in the country who have authority. We have no magic wand. We will not resolve this matter, which is with the court now. But we want to talk to the parties that are relevant on this matter to find out. You know, money cannot listen to reason. The unfortunate thing about money, it is hard to come to you. But when it is with you, it is so easy to leave you. And those people who are getting money at the expense of the people, they better watch out because it's very easy to lose money. It is itching to go and leave you. And if you can't protect it properly, you will be without money, but without your people as well, your friends and relatives. We will deal with the Northwest matter. We will come to Northwest and talk to them. I'm hitting the call also of the well where the kings and horses drink. The next thing we are going to deal with is the issue of mining rights on rural areas. We will focus on this. It may cause a clash between us and our sister portfolio committee in Parliament. But it's a matter that relates to traditional communities, communal land, and the rights thereof. And therefore there's nothing we can do. We cannot avoid dealing with this matter. The third matter that we want to deal with, the mining rights relate not only to Northwest but to those communities that are facing this problem. Then we will go to KZN and deal with Matiwanu's Corp, the issue about land and women's rights and CPAs. And the last matter we will be dealing with is the issue of the Limpopo matter. I know that the minister is seized with the responsibility to resolve the next matter, which is modeled after Kruger Park. I think it's called Mala Mala. Because the minister is happy with you, with your outcome. He thinks that Mala Mala could follow the same route or similar game parks. I know in the area in Bedi called Fort Brown, the land, communal land, is being bought, included in the game reserve. So it's not you alone, there are other problems as well. I invite Hank, I invite Dr. Diacher, I invite Dr. Lauzi, I invite the DG, I invite, what else did you say? Is that name? DG? Yeah. We will also invite a representative of the House of Traditional Leaders. We will invite, I don't know which women, but we will be informed by the people who have been capturing this information. Dr. Diatha is always accompanied by Afasa, so we cannot separate the CME's tweets in that regard. There are specific issues that are impacting on policy, which we have the core of the working group that must define how we will conduct ourselves in that area. And because of that, we will convene a meeting in the next few weeks to deal with the terms of reference. And they will have to take the terms of reference to their respective principals so that we can undertake this work in a way that will say, here, for instance, let me deal with the one example. Dr. Hall here was saying there are certain questions that have not been answered in police. And who is dealing with that issue? Your working groups there are dealing with that. But Parliament is not doing anything, and yet we have got our obligation, constitutional obligation, to do something about it. So that is what I'm talking about. Instead of folding our arms and wait for those working groups to produce a result, we should be seized with the responsibility to attend to this problem. I will say no more. All I want now for you to go home and play with the cat. the former premier of the Eastern Cape, used to say the tendency of leaders who do nothing but attend meetings. They come to meetings, they say all what they want to say, and go home and play with the cat, and do nothing about what they said in the meeting. For you, thank you very much, because we know you are practitioners, and thank you very much for enriching us. We would like to have you again in Parliament, so that we can then solve this problem. And Mr. Nubaitomi, yeah, you tell them our pump and food, man. Please, Wednesday, the body is Tagale Kai. Umamusuduza, what's the announcement? It's only a side. Kajarumbo, Bobudi, Navandu, the Bakulu. Did you get up or would you?
Thank you, Chairperson. As an advocate of social questions, besides being an MP, I just want to say to the people that are here that Tatama Diva is not going again. Can we just keep being in our prayers? Thank you. That's all I want to say.
Okay, I didn't know that. We will urge everybody who prays. Those who do not pray, meditate. And those who do not meditate, just remember him all the time. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. We will apologize for any shortcoming that we have in Parliament. But Mr. Papa and the city is a corner in the tour, but it may not be as good as yesterday, but it will be different.